Chapter 10 Confusion. Anyone watching from the side would have thought them a single being, a Marilith perhaps, with six arms, all holding deadly weapons of extraordinary craftsmanship and imbued with powerful magic. Even those who knew these three warriors well, Drizzt, Entreri, and Jarlaxle, would have simply sat back and gasped. Their coordination was marvelous, their intertwining dance, rolling over each other's thrusts, following a sweeping blade to cross to the other side of their battle line, ducking beneath the sidelong swipe of an ally's weapon, even leaping at the last possible instant as a long sword or scimitar cut beneath, mesmerizing in its perfection and timing. The demons in front of them, including Balgura and Mains, melted away, cut a dozen times, stabbed in the eye, the heart, the groin, and the line of three warriors steadily advanced, stepping over the smoking, dissipating husks of the fallen. When the corridor widened, so too did their line. Whichever two were on the ends moved out wide, which only made the rolling dance a more athletic endeavor. Simple turns became dramatic leaps, and simple steps became quick jaunts. Having more enemies clustering in front of them only gave them more things to hit. The demons couldn't keep up with the trio, and never seemed close to getting a weapon or a clawed hand anywhere near an intended target. The power, Jarlaxle heard in his head, and it seemed more an expression of ecstasy than anything else. The mercenary concentrated on the fight at hand, stabbing Kazidea forward, then twisting to parry the swing of a Balgura's heavy hammer. In the simple parry, meant to deflect and not to block, the demon's weapon fell apart, the shaft sliced cleanly, and even the heavy stone head falling to the stone floor in two pieces, cut diagonally. Jarlaxle, intent on finishing the brute, which he did with a second thrust, only barely registered the destroyed hammer, but that image stayed with him as he moved forward. He knew Kazidea, Cutter, was a powerful blade, a sword of sharpness. But the thought that such a simple twist could cut a heavy warhammer so easily and cleanly seemed purely ridiculous. The power, he heard again in his head. And this time he knew it was the blade telepathically communicating. Jarlaxle dismissed the noise in his thoughts and focused more fully on the battle at hand, reminding himself that working with such allies as Drizzt and Entreri could get one as readily killed by a friendly sword as an enemy blade if one was imperfect in the dance. But that was exactly what seemed to be happening around him. Drizzt leaped forward and fell into line right beside a Balgura. The demon hesitated only for the blink of an eye before biting at the drow dinner that had just served itself. Jarlaxle's fine sword intervened, cutting the Balgura in the side of its face, but then Drizzt's blade parried Jarlaxle's, and a riposte sent Jarlaxle sliding backward. "Foul tricksters!" Drizzt yelled. "Be warned, we are deceived!" Entreri leaped past Jarlaxle then, going at Drizzt, clearly to kill the drow rather than support him. Jarlaxle didn't know what to do, so he reacted with the wand that had served him so well all these years. He hit the pair with a summoned gob of goo. "You are both deceived," he shouted as they tumbled away, and Jarlaxle filled the void immediately to stab hard at the Balgura, forcing it back. To the side, Drizzt and Entreri were already both extricating themselves from the goo. Jarlaxle had only scored a glancing hit. Jarlaxle threw down the feather from his magical hat, bringing forth the giant Diatrima bird, and bade it drive back the Balgura and the few remaining minor demons behind it. From a ring, he launched a blade barrier, a whirlwind of summoned swords, into the back of the demon pack, chewing at them and slicing them apart. From a necklace, he detached a small ruby and threw it to the far side of the enemy forces, melting a bunch of manes with a fireball. Jarlaxle hated wasting his precious contingency spells and items. He could not summon the Diatrima for another day, could not use the spell from his ring until he managed to get it recharged by a powerful priest. And it would take him many coins to replace the ruby on his necklace of fireballs. But there were other concerns. He looked to his companions, shouting at them to stop. They were nearly free then and already trying to swing at each other. "By the gods, you idiots!" Jarlaxle screamed. "The fight is ended!" The volume of his scream and the atypical behavior from Jarlaxle finally seemed to get through to them. Driz tore free of the remaining goo and stumbled backward, scimitar still in hand as he eyed Entreri suspiciously.
"Show your true form, demon," Entreri ordered, but he stuttered at the end and blinked repeatedly, then stood up straight and glanced at Jarlaxle, clearly confused.
"It would seem that our demon enemies have some tricks of their own to play," said Drizzt, who also sheathed his weapons then. But Jarlaxle was only half listening, if that.
"Do you feel it?" Cassidea asked in his head. "The magic of life, the magic of chaos."
Jarlaxle wasn't sure what to make of it. But then it occurred to him that this part of their journey had taken them very near the Phaerisris. Cassidea was a drow blade, and so the magic of that mystical radiation had been instrumental in giving the sword sentience and its magically enhanced keen edge.
"You have been here before many times," Jarlaxle reminded the blade. He was confident that the sword had traversed these tunnels in the past.
"Yet I sense your surprise."
"Never like this," he felt from his excited sword.
Jarlaxle wasn't sure what to make of it, but he slid the sword away for safekeeping and focused again on his companions. Both were shaken and scrutinized each other, as if they both expected a demon to take shape from within the other's drow form.
"The mask," Drizzt said, confirming Jarlaxle's fears. "How do we know it is truly Artemis Entreri beneath Agatha's mask?"
"Because I gave it to him and watched him put it on," Jarlaxle replied in a deadpan, incredulous tone.
"A major demon would be clever enough to continue Entreri's exact ruse if it got its claws on that magic mask," reasoned Drizzt.
Entreri pulled off the mask and reverted to his normal form immediately.
"And a major demon would be clever enough to deflect attention in such a manner as you just did," he said, aiming the remark at Drizzt, who seemed very much his adversary at that point.
"I have magical true sight," Jarlaxle interrupted. And when both turned to regard him, he tapped his heavily enchanted eye patch. "Though Agatha's mask could fool me. Its magic is ancient and powerful. No polymorph enchantment a demon might wage would deceive me, even one cast by a major demon."
"And a demon lord?" asked Drizzt, who seemed unable to let this go.
"Aye," the equally suspicious Entreri echoed.
Jarlaxle stared at Drizzt and held up his arms as if in surrender.
"It is Artemis Entreri," he said to the ranger. He turned to the assassin. "Put the mask back on and leave it on. And it is Drizzt O'Erden before you and no demon impostor. What foolishness has possessed you, both of you?"
"We are dealing with powerful denizens of the lower plains," Entreri said, and he became a drow once more. "What you call foolishness, I deem caution."
"And if you had killed each other, what then?"
"Then it would all be, perhaps, as it was ever supposed to be," Entreri said with deadly seriousness.
He looked at Drizzt as he issued the threat.
"If the last thing I do before I cease to draw breath in this life is to end the life of Artemis Entreri, then I know I will leave this world a better place than I found it," Drizzt returned.
Jarlaxle kept his hands out to the side, too flustered to even realize his arms were out there. This seemed to him a throwback to days long past. Hadn't Drizzt and Entreri gone far beyond this foolishness? They had traveled together for many years, indeed had done incredible things together, in Port Last particularly. Now, for no reason Jarlaxle could discern, they were ready, even eager to kill each other.
"Demogorgon," Jarlaxle whispered under his breath. Wasn't one of the greatest weapons of the Prince of Demons his ability to drive men mad? That unsettling thought nagged at Jarlaxle and had him looking over his shoulder more than once, as if expecting the gargantuan Demogorgon to come crashing through the hall at any moment. The way was clear. Both ways now that the remaining pack of demons had been properly dispatched. To the side, the great flightless bird pecked at the smoking corpse of the Balgura. Jarlaxle wearily rubbed his face and considered the warnings Phaelus had given him regarding Menzo Berenzon. None of this was going as he had expected. Every step seemed to bring new challenges, Would he even be able to take his rest this day, with the possibility that he would awaken to the sounds of Drisden and Treri engaged in mortal combat?
I know not what has brought you both to these suspicions, he said. Is there so little trust to be had between we three?
Drisden and Treri scowled at each other.
Then we should turn back for Gontalgrim, said Jarlaxle.
Aye, and be rid of this one, Treri said, with a nod at Drizzt. We shouldn't have brought him in the first place.
Jarlaxle sighed and held his thoughts silent. If Drizzt had not agreed to come along, he wouldn't have made this journey. He didn't care enough about the elf Dahlia to risk so much. And though he, or at least Bregan de Earth, was indebted to Artemis and Treri for his loss of another lover, another woman, a half-elf named Callahay, Jarlaxle had no intention of risking his life repaying that debt. What Jarlaxle couldn't tell Treri was that this journey really wasn't about Dahlia. He meant to rescue her, and hoped Camuriel would find some way to unwind the writhing snakes in her mind. That would aid Jarlaxle in his greater aims, and indeed had served him as a catalyst for convincing Drizzt to come in the first place. But Dahlia's fate was not paramount. Jarlaxle was bringing Drizzt to Menzo Berenzon to exploit a growing rift among his people, a rising scream of protest from the males of Menzo Berenzon that they would not forever be held as vassals to the matriarchs. For more than a century, Jarlaxle and so many others had looked to Drizzt as the one who found freedom, the one who denied the ways of Loth and escaped, and indeed thrived. Even Gromph couldn't help but nod approvingly, if secretly, when he thought of Drizzt Do'Urden. That was why Gromph had chosen to clandestinely use Drizzt's body as the conduit for his great dispelling magic to boil away the darkening that Tsabrek Zor'Lauren, acting on the will of Loth, had created above the Silver Marches. Drizzt was Jarlaxle's chance to exploit the rift in Menzo Berenzon, and Matron Mother Xerath Zor'Lauren's chance to regain her stature in the city. The arrival of Drizzt, to pull Dahlia from the ridiculous reincarnation of House Do'Urden, to poke his finger in the eye of Matron Mother Quenthel Bayenri, to send great waves through the city, was Jarlaxle's countering wave against the rising tide of zealotry growing in Menzo Berenzon. Unyielding fealty to the strictest edicts of Lady Loth would push all the males of Menzo Berenzon far back down the ladder of ascension, and would indeed threaten even Bregan de Earth. Jarlaxle had worked too hard and too long to let that happen. But ah, what now, he wondered, looking at his companions. Their mission suddenly seemed ill-fated. He had gone into it unsure, and indeed with some of his advisers, and even Gromph warning him that there was too little certainty and too much to lose. And now, in the few days since they had marched from Luskin's Undercity, they had learned that their destination had been virtually shut down, even to magical intrusions. They had found corridors full of demons, and now this, some strangeness that had infected his companions in a most dangerous way. We will return Drizzt to King Brunner's court, and then we will return too and remain in Luskin, Jarlaxle said. And Treri's face contorted with a clear undercurrent of growing rage.
You promised me this, he said in a quiet and deadly voice. You owe me this.
We cannot do this without Drizzt, Jarlaxle said, and convincingly, despite the secretive other half of the equation. He, Drizzt, and Treri were gaining something special here, and they all knew it. Their work together in fending off the demon hordes was no minor matter. He and Treri simply couldn't replace Drizzt with someone else and go their merry way.
I give not a damn about Drizzt, Treri growled back at him.
Then you give not a damn about Dahlia, Jarlaxle said. Without him, we cannot get near to her.
I don't believe you.
Then we return the way we came.
No!
The two stared at each other. Treri hatefully, Jarlaxle curiously.
We go on, said Drizzt, and both turned to him. He looked Jarlaxle in the eye.
Or I do, alone. Dahlia is down there. She was my companion, my friend.
I cannot abandon her in her time of desperation.
Will you take a second wife, then? Entreri asked.
She would be better off as my slave than as consort to the demon masked in the body of Artemis Entreri, Drizzt snapped back, and both drew their blades once more.
One strike, Jarlaxle warned, stepping between them.
One blade against blade, one wound from either of you upon the other, even in the midst of battle, even by accident, and our quest is ended.
He looked to each, staring sternly until the blades went down, then went away.
When Dalia is returned to the world above, I give you leave to murder each other, if that is your choice.
She heard the whistle, a strange sound indeed, that reverberated like the beacon of a light in Curel's mind, and so too in Ivanel's. What was this sensation? And then Ivanel's heart leaped. They had done it. Curel had sent her thoughts out from the stoop and across the plains to contact Camuriel, and there, in the hive mind of the Illithids, she had found her son. That elation turned to doubt, though, when Camuriel recoiled in anger. Camuriel chastised his mother for causing him to deliver to Gromph Beanri the fabric of the spell the deceived archmage had used to bring Demogorgon to the Underdark, and in doing so thinning the boundary of the Faerzris itself. Ivanel couldn't sort it out for a long while, but as Curel responded to Camuriel, it became clear. Loth had done this. In the abyss, in a Baelor's lair, the spider queen in Curel's form had used Camuriel to deceive Gromph. And now Camuriel was in hiding from the dangerous Gromph. Ivanel could feel Camuriel's hatred and could sense his desire for vengeance against his mother. And even Curel's doubts and confusion would have no sway here in convincing Camuriel that she had not done this to him. Ivanel felt the battered woman's deep regret. The former matron mother of House Oblodra desperately wanted to set things straight with her son. Not out of any love for Camuriel, of course, but simply out of worry over her own legacy. What a curse her name would become, perhaps even centuries after her demise, when all the drow believed it was she who broke the boundary of the Faerzris and loosed the demon lords upon the Underdark. And there was nothing Curel could do about it. Camuriel shut them out then, so suddenly and forcefully that Ivanel was thrust from the melding, and her eyes blinked open back in the room of divination. She suppressed her panic and her instinct to slap Curel too out of her trance. Instead, she focused on the image in the scrying bowl, nodding as she realized that Curel was no longer in the hive mind, that her consciousness was flying fast along the corridors of the Underdark, backtracking the call of the whistle, perhaps. The image flickered in form, then went away again, repeating the process several times. The last image caught Ivanel's attention and took her breath away. But the stoop waters cleared, and Curel groaned and opened her eyes, the connection broken.
Where are they?
Ivanel Beanri demanded, the bared power of her voice forcing Curel from her thoughts and into the present. Curel stared at her adversary and even sneered.
Where are they? Ivanel repeated. Tell me, or I will fetch the Illithid Methil and bid him wrest the information from your thoughts. In that event, he will leave some foul presence behind, I promise.
Curel tried to maintain her glare, but Ivanel's expression made it clear that she was not bluffing. The Illithid Methil Elvandenvelp would implant deep suggestions, even memories, to terrorize Curel, leaving her helpless to distinguish reality from nightmare.
Camuriel is not certain of their exact location, Ivanel finished for her. Where are they, and who are they? Jarlaxle, I know, but the others.
Drizzt Do'Urden,
Curel blurted, and Ivanel's breath left her once more.
Where?
She demanded with what little voice she could muster.
You ask last opportunity,
Ivanel said with a low and threatening growl. Curel stuttered no more.
Jarlaxle and his companions are in the Underdark, a few days out from Menzo Berenzon.
Ivanel pulled her hand from the magical stoop.
but commanded the enchanted Beenri Tul to hold Kjorl in place. Glowering all the way, the young and dangerous Beenri walked up to stare Kjorl in the face, her eyes barely an inch away. "You do not need to make me your enemy," she said with surprising tenderness. "I understand that you hate me. Now, more than that, I understand that you hate House Beenri above all others. That is well and good and likely deserved. And I do not care." She paused and cupped Kjorl's chin in her hand. "Why are they coming?" Kjorl's responding expression was one of pure incredulity.
"For House Dor Erden," Ivanel said. "To rescue the elf called Dalia."
Kjorl managed a small nod of affirmation.
"This is marvelous, do you not see?" Ivanel asked, and she spun away laughing.
She stopped quickly and spun back on Kjorl.
"Jarlaxle is hiding Gromp from Matron Mother Quenthel."
Kjorl nodded, her expression showing her belief she was truly doomed now.
"Bold," said Ivanel, "and brave. Jarlaxle comes personally to see to this. Marvelous."
Kjorl looked at her incredulously, having no way to sort out the glee, unexpected for such a dangerous situation.
"And we have a better way to spy," Ivanel said.
Kjorl's jaw dropped open, and she shook her head, clearly at a loss. Ivanel understood that dumbfounded look. To Kjorl Odrin, this Ivanel Beenri standing in front of her was a reflection of, perhaps a reincarnation of, or indeed perhaps even one and the same with, the Ivanel Beenri she had known before. She did not understand that this mere child before her was so much more.
"Splendid!"
Ivanel cried out, rushing back around the stoop and sinking her hands once more into the rim to again contact the hands of Kjorl Odrin.
"Go now,"
Ivanel instructed, and when Kjorl did not immediately respond, she added, "To Jarlaxle at once!" She paused a moment, then reconsidered.
"No. To Camoriel," she instructed. "To him. But do not contact him."
"The Illithids," Kjorl meekly protested.
"Go!"
In moments, they were across the plains once more, though as soon as they neared the spot where Camoriel stood, his delicate hands massaging the brain of the great hive mind, Ivanel telepathically instructed Kjorl away.
"Follow the path again to Jarlaxle."
Perhaps they could have gotten out there straight away from the Room of Divination, but Ivanel had wanted something else ever so briefly. She had felt the power surrounding Camoriel on their initial pass, emanating at the edges of her consciousness, the hive mind, glorious power. Oh, but she would experience that someday, she promised herself, as her thoughts and Kjorl's wound back to Toril, and back to along the winding corridors of the Underdark. In a heartbeat, though Ivanel was not even aware of her own heartbeat at that amazing moment, she found herself looking at the mercenary leader, Jarlaxle.
Her uncle.
The purple eyes of one of his companions caught her and held her. From the memories of the Eternal, this new Ivanel knew this was Drizzt Dor Erden, the ultimate heretic, and also, in the greatest of ironies, the beloved tool of Loth. And they were heading blindly to Menzo Berenzon. Ivanel could hardly contain her joy. She telepathically bade Kjorl to flicker through Drizzt's thoughts, then to the third unknown companion. There she got an amazing surprise, to learn that this was no drow, but a human in perfect drow disguise. A human. Weak-minded, susceptible. Ivanel sensed Jarlaxle's unease. The wary mercenary suspected that something was amiss. At her bidding, Kjorl went back into the thoughts of the disguised human, and there they stayed, hidden from Jarlaxle and Drizzt, and even from the unwitting human host. As they had done with Manolan Fay in the corridor in an earlier session, they now looked out through the eyes of Artemis and Treri. A short while later, Ivanel emerged alone from the Room of Divination. Manolan Fay waited outside. The priestess glanced past her into the room, looking curiously at the unmoving Kjorl, who remained at the stoop, her hands melded with the stone.
"She is held," mind and body, Ivanel explained. You will go to her often and magically sustain her. Mistress? It could be days, 10 days even. I'll not have her die of thirst.
Manol and Fay seemed not to understand. If Kjorl Odrin perishes, or becomes too weak to continue her task, I will return you to Ertu in the Abyss in her stead.
Manol and Fay's widening eyes told Ivanel that she had heard that command clearly.
And inform Matron Mother Quenthal and all the others that no one is to enter this room, Ivanel added. Any who disobey will face my wrath, and it will not be a pleasant thing.
Yes, mistress.
Ivanel swung around and walked away to the echoes of her favorite words. She wasn't quite sure what she had done or how. Through some combination of her own divine magic and the powers of the scrying room, she had magically held Kjorl. That alone was nothing special, of course, but in this case, it had accomplished much more. Kjorl was locked in place, in body and in thought. She saw the world through the eyes of Artemis and Treri, though neither of them knew it. And even El, too, could access that vision simply by looking into the waters of the stoop. She had magically created the perfect spy in the adventuring trio's midst, one of their own. And in the process, she had turned Kjorl Odrin into what amounted to a living crystal ball. What a fabulous day it had been. They were coming. Driz Do'Urden was delivering himself to her in Menzo Baranzon.
I know not what to make of it, Jarlaxle said to Matron Mother Xerath the next morning, when he had slipped away from the other two to meet the woman in an appointed place, less than a day's march from the gates of Menzo Baranzon. Have you called to Camuriel? Finally, he answered, Jarlaxle said, holding up the small silver whistle he kept on a chain, one Camuriel had psionically attuned to his thoughts so he could hear it across miles, even across the plains of existence. I had thought him lost to me.
He is in the hive mind of an illithid colony, Xerath reminded him.
He will be of little help on our mission, Jarlaxle explained. None, actually, until we are back in Luskin, where he will try to unravel Dahlia's insanity. He will not venture into the Underdark.
Gromph is about, Xerath reasoned.
It is more than that, Jarlaxle explained, and he reflexively glanced back in the direction of his companions, who had been acting so curiously. There is something about the thinning of the Faerzris, a mind sickness.
The chaos of the Abyss seeps through? Xerath wondered aloud.
The Illithids are very sensitive to such things, and terrified of them, of course, Jarlaxle explained. Camuriel will not come here.
Do you still wish to follow through with your plans? Xerath asked, after a long pause to digest the information.
I want to get Dahlia out of there, yes. It will wound Matron Mother Bayenri, but not mortally, and will force her hand in allowing the Zorlaren family to assume complete control over House Do'Urden.
Or she will disband House Do'Urden altogether.
She'll not do that, Jarlaxle said with some confidence. She has pressed the other houses into a tight corner. Even her allies have come to fear her as much as they fear their rivals. She has shown them that she considers herself far above them, above their council even. The Matron Mother's one play to assure no movement against her is to bring House Zorlaren back, and to do so in a way that offers them, you, the same independence as every other house. Are your children up to that task?
Xerath gave a little noncommittal laugh. She wasn't going back to Menzo Baranzon, they both had decided. Jarlaxle's play to weaken the matriarchy had Matron Mother Xerath's fingerprints all over it. Those other matron mothers who decided to wage war to keep their power unchallenged would surely conspire to murder Matron Mother Xerath first if they could find her.
You will need Camuriel before this is through, she said, and Jarlaxle didn't argue the point.
I might need him simply to deal with my companions, he replied, glancing back the way he had come to the chambers that held Drizden and Treri.
Our people are running patrols in the outer corridors, Xerath explained. I can lead you there and give you my imprimatur. That should get you into the city, though from there is little I can offer. Who among your children know I'm coming for Dahlia?
None.
Thank you, Jarlaxle said with a bow. He didn't trust Xerath's flock, of course. There was simply too much opportunity for personal gain for any of them. In truth, Jarlaxle was shocked that he trusted Xerath. Might she not regain favor with Quenthal by double-crossing him? It was a calculated risk. Xerath might come to consider that Jarlaxle's odds of succeeding were so tiny, and given that, any gain she might make with him would not outweigh the possibilities for her to find favor with the ruling council once more. But no, he decided, Xerath's best play was with him. Her relationship with the men of her house was no ploy. She hadn't elevated the Zorlaran males in any twisted plot to give her an edge on the other houses, far from it. House Zorlaran's climb was in spite of Xerath's unusual feelings toward the weaker gender, and not because of them. But she had held her ground through the decades, because there was honest conviction behind her decision. To Xerath's belief, subjugating the males of Menzo Berenzon meant that the drow could only achieve half of their potential. "This journey has left me uncertain," he admitted. "Nothing is as it should be, or as I anticipated. Demon lords walk the Underdark. Are you surprised by the chaos?" Jarlaxle thought of the fit of what? Delusion? Insanity? That had come over Drizzt and Entreri in the earlier fight. Might that increase? He was tempted to take off his eye patch, that he might experience whatever had gripped the two, if indeed it was some outside influence, but he quickly dismissed that notion. "Concerned more than surprised," he replied. "Let me go to them and offer the choice. I will return to you this way momentarily. And if with them, then know we will press on. I would like to be in the city this very 10 day. They are not to know of my involvement, on pain of their deaths," Matron Mother Xerath reminded him. "You don't trust me?" Jarlaxle asked, feigning dismay. "I do not trust them," she corrected. And Jarlaxle grinned and spun away. He was back with Entreri and Drizzt a short while later. The two settled very near to where he had left them. Entreri guarded the north corridor, a winding and climbing trail, absently spinning his jeweled dagger on its point against the tip of his extended index finger. Drizzt sat across the way, on a ledge of rock in front of the corridor that had brought them to this crossroads. "The way is clear. For a bit, at least," Jarlaxle announced. Entreri nodded. But Drizzt didn't lift his face, apparently distracted. Jarlaxle didn't much like the look of that, but he pressed on. "Now I must tell you that at every turn, my expectations have been altered. You know of the unexpected challenges," Phaelus or Lauren explained, "and there are more, I fear. Something. I cannot quite discern the source, but something is amiss down here in these deep tunnels. We will likely get into the city, but from there I cannot predict our fate."
"Are you saying that we should turn back?" Entreri asked, and every word was accompanied by a profound scowl.
"I am only offering the truth."
"You promised me that we would do this. You owe this to me."
Jarlaxle held his hand up in the air to calm the man, and was afraid that Entreri might leap at him with deadly intent. "What say you, Drizzt?" he asked. The ranger didn't seem to hear.
"Say it,"
Entreri demanded, apparently taking the silence as an admission that they should indeed turn back. For a moment, Jarlaxle expected another skirmish. But Drizzt looked up finally and said,
"We came for Dahlia.
She is still in the city?"
"Of course,"
Entreri snapped. At the same time as Jarlaxle replied, "That is my belief."
"Then let us be done with this," said Drizzt. "We came for Dahlia, and so we shall find her and deliver her from Menzo Berenzon."
Jarlaxle was glad to hear it, though he certainly had expected nothing less. But his smile wouldn't hold. Something in the way Drizzt rose, something etched on his face that Jarlaxle couldn't quite place, spoke of a profound unease. With every step Drizzt took, it seemed as if he wanted to wince, not from physical pain, but from something within him that was surely less than comfortable. Jarlaxle led the way quickly, determined to get into the city as soon as possible. He knew that Xerath was watching and that she was ahead of him. He found her signal scratches here and there, guiding him along his path. Matron Mother Xerath was doing her job, and Jarlaxle was confident that she had set up the means to get them into the city with a patrol. But Entreri simmered on the edge of explosive outrage, and Drizzt wore an expression that seemed utterly defeated, forlorn beyond anything Jarlaxle could imagine from Drizzt, or anything he had ever seen from the Ranger before. Jarlaxle only liked riddles when he knew the answer.